south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. How about let's start with a story? Well, a few weeks ago, I was at one of these first world hospitals down here in Central America, just showing a few new expats and fresh gringos around. Since, you know, when I'm in the area, I'm kind of the go-to guy when people want to see for themselves just what kind of first-world healthcare options there are down here. And note, we do some of that first-world hospital and medical specialist touring, too, at the Expat Wisdom Seminars. So if you come to the seminar, you'll get some first-world healthcare boots on the ground there. You will be amazed, I promise you. Okay, since I wandered on that subject, let me throw a plug in here. If you want to get in on my July 2015 Expat Wisdom Seminar, just go to expatwisdom.com, click on the Latin Seminar link for full details. People are signing up already because they know if they sign up before May 1st, they get that early bird $500 a person discount. And don't forget, if you sign up as a couple or two people sharing double occupancy, you save an additional $500 a piece or $1,000 a couple. And note this, for those of you coming down as singles, sometimes people ask me if I could find someone to partner up with them so they can go on the double occupancy thing and save that $500 a person. If you're interested in that option, we can hook you up with someone else who's interested in doing the same thing. So that's always a possibility. We've done it before. But sorry, if we work that deal out, it won't be co-ed. You'll have to go guy with guy and gal with gal. So come down, get your boots on the ground, get a plan B. You're going to need one. Anyway, back at the hospital, one of the gringos happened to be a mechanical engineer. Now, get this. The first thing he asked to see when we were doing the tour was not the operating rooms or the intensive care unit or the tomography unit or the digital imaging section. Nope, not the AC, the air filtration system, but of all things, he wanted to see the backup generators. Come to think of it, an odd but logical request. Now, I must say, of all the times I've been through first world style hospitals down here, bringing gringos through and expats, only one time before did one of the gringos want to see the backup generators. And boy, those backup generators were squeaky clean. Of course, it's something you never think about, except if you've been living in the third world a long time. Because when I first came down here, I remember you could pretty much set your watch by the 4-hour blackout every day in Costa Rica. And, you know, like I mentioned in a past show, that so rarely happens these days, except for natural disasters or if the electric company's digging up the road or something, or some drunk chicken bus driver wipes out a substation. That's been known to happen, believe me. And surprisingly enough, when people steal power down here, and they do, I've actually got some pictures that I show at my Expat Wisdom seminars of people stealing power, you know, climbing up a pole and barehanding some wires together. Man, I don't know how they do it, but surprisingly enough, it's a rare event when someone gets electrocuted down here, since in the poor and lower middle class neighborhoods, there's at least 1,000,001 code violations. In other words, 1,001 ways to get a fatal shock. But oddly enough, that rarely happens. Now, you do get shocked, don't get me wrong, but not from your toaster or your microwave oven. Now, I guarantee if you're down here for a year or so, you're going to get shocked. I'm talking about electrical shocks now. Probably when you're a guest over at some middle-class Latin's house and you're going to use a shower. That's one place I'm always a little leery of, other people's showers. I think every one of my gringo friends and acquaintances who've been down here 5 years or more have had their share of shower shocks. I certainly have. And since we're all taught to be electrically gun-shy up north, that first shower shock really scares the hell out of you. But as far as I've seen, they're not fatal. And that's after 25 years or so of experience. So, why the shower? Well, because of those cheap point-of-use electric heaters that are mounted on top of shower heads. Look, every single middle-class and lower-middle-class house in Latin America has one. It's only in gringo houses and upper-middle-class and wealthy houses in Latin America where you see whole-house water heaters that aren't of the point-of-use type. Now, about these little shower head shockers. Now, that's something they wouldn't allow up in the first world because wires are hanging and it's 220 usually too. And even though the outer casing's made of plastic and all that, if there's a grounding problem, and believe me, people down here don't know what a ground is, you're going to get zapped But you're not going to get knocked out and you're not going to get killed either. I've never heard of that. And by the way, the only time you ever read in the paper of someone getting electrocuted, and that's rare, like I said, is when some nutball's on top of a building trying to hotwire something and he leans against or touches a high-tension wire. Because down here, since there are no inspectors, people have been known to build their houses right up to and including high, medium, and low-tension power poles, which, by the way, almost always have their wires dangling and swaying in the breeze. And sometimes those poles end up even in your backyard, since the electric company seems to put poles just about anywhere it feels like it. It doesn't seem like they really need any municipal permission to just stick them anywhere they like, including sticking them in highways into the road, not even on the curb. I've got pictures of that too. In fact, I got a couple of really nice pictures showing power poles sticking out of roads 10 feet from the curb. In other words, you must swerve for that pole or you'll have a head-on with it. It's just a textbook case of what not to do as a civil engineer, but they do it down here and get away with it. Which is why I advise you never drive at night unless you really know the area. And remember, if you hit it, there's really no one to sue. In fact, I rather like the fact that when you're down here, you're responsible for your own life and no one is sue crazy like up in the States. That said, imagine it's your first time in a big Latin city, you rent a car at the airport, and you come up on something like that at 11 at night. Remember, 9 out of 10 times, roads in Latin America are badly lit. Or just not lit at all. But I digress. Now, where were we? Oh yeah, we were talking about getting shocked in the shower. So why am I bringing this subject up? Well, I recommend that every expat carry with him in his luggage, suitcase, or car a pair of flip-flop, plastic, or rubber sandals. Because, you know, if you're traveling around, especially in the boonies, and you're going kind of low budget or even medium budget, you're going to go into the occasional 2, even 3-star hotel, and you're going to find they've got those point-of-use hot water heaters. In other words, you've got a 110, sometimes 220-volt line suspended 3 or 4 inches from your noggin in the shower head straight above. Now note when you go into some of these old hotels and people's houses too, remember, sometimes those little point-of-use water heaters are so rotten, rusted, and corroded with a dozen horrible repairs and wires hanging everywhere and duct tape that in the dark, before you flick the light switch on, it looks like something that popped out of an alien's stomach. And here's something else to look out for. They turn on automatically as you start the water flowing. At least, they're supposed to. Now, the older ones will and they won't, depending. You'll never know that for sure unless you hold your hand in the water for a while. Now, when you're doing that, note that most of the time, the valves in the shower are going to be made out of metal. Meaning, that's right, if it's wired wrong or haphazardly, chance for a shock. Which is why whenever you go into a bathroom to have a shower, whether it's a cheap or even medium-grade hotel, or you're staying over at a friend or acquaintance house, you're going to wear those flip-flops around in the bathroom now, aren't you? And when you're in the shower. Just a little word of warning for you there. And don't think that you're safe because there's a rubber mat in the shower. Those things are not guaranteed to be shockproof. They might not insulate you. And believe me, you don't want to examine one of those too closely either or lift it up. Because if you do lift it up, you're probably the first one who's done that in about 30 years. So if you're down in Latin America and there's a point-of-use water heater shower head, you should instantly be on your guard and assume the worst, meaning a lot of electrical and plumbing codes have been violated. That said, you don't want to be poking around at things and being too adventurous in the shower. Which brings me full circle back to that little hospital tour I was talking about. So anyway, after we went down and looked at those backup generators and got the seal of approval on those from our gringo engineer, we sat down and had some coffee with the emergency room doc. And now, you might be wondering, why could he sit down and have coffee with us? What about all those sorry patients backed up in the emergency room? Well, let's see now. There were something like 20 seats in the emergency waiting room. There were 18 empty ones on a Friday afternoon, for a grand total of 2 people waiting to see the ER doctor. And in the ER examining rooms themselves, you know, the ones with the crash carts in them, I believe there were 8 rooms like that. 2 of them had patients in them. So then your knee-jerk reaction would be, how could that be? A first-world hospital and it's not balls to the wall overflowing with damaged people? In a word, no, it never is. Because as it turns out, this is a first-world-style hospital where you pay as you go or you buy a health insurance plan. Then you're covered. It's not a hospital for the poor, the lower middle class, and even most of the Latin middle class. And as for the 70 to 80% of the rest of Latin America that could never afford to go to that hospital, even though prices are about a sixth of first world prices, well, the poor huddled masses, when they have an emergency, they either grin and bear it and go to the local pharmacist for a remedy of some kind. And if that's not enough, there's a car accident or a gunshot wound, whatever, they head off to their local free government hospital or clinic. And again, I'm repeating myself here, but the only good thing about a free government hospital in Latin America is the emergency room. I take that back. Not the emergency room itself. Believe me, you do not want me to try to describe the smell, the sanitation, and the look of that place. What I meant to say is the docs that man those ER rooms are superb trauma specialists. Why? Because practice makes perfect and there are always too many patients in the ER room. So then what happens if a gringo has a problem and ends up in one of those public hospital ERs? Well, you know, if you're a regular Latin patient, they might not see you for 4 hours and you could bleed to death. However, as soon as you walk in, I guarantee everyone will stop what they're doing and take a look at you because you'll be the only gringo there. And that's when your gringo advantage will kick in and people will come up to you and bring you to the front of the line. I know, I've seen that happen. So why in the hell was I in an emergency room at one of those public hospitals? Well, that's because I really wanted to see for myself how dreadful they were. And yep, they're everything they're cracked up to be and worse. And you know, there's something that people never tell you about either, and that's the smell, but like I said, I'm not going to get into that. I'll only try to give you an imaginary idea of it. Think of some of the more intense and disagreeable hospital smells you've experienced. Multiply that by three, add a dab of sweat, a dash of feces, and a shot of urine, and you're close. So then, who did I drag along to that odoriferous extravaganza? Expat Eddie, of course. And though it was balls to the wall, blood, elbows, and a-holes, get this, within 5 minutes, an ER doctor spotted us, rushed right up, looked us over, up and down, and said, "What are you here for? What's wrong?" And after we told him we were just looking around, he said, "Go right ahead." Then he kind of cringed and said, "No pictures, please, okay?" Then he said in good but broken English, "Don't really want this on Facebook, you know?" And then he smiled and said something really strange. He said, "I'm thankful you guys came in here because it's so refreshing to have someone I can speak English to. I'm getting out of practice, you know." Now, things like that seem to only happen when you're off the gringo tourist trail. Anyway, the point is, if by chance you're in a car accident, let's say, and the ambulance takes you to a public hospital emergency room, you really are in good hands. Though because of the glove shortage, they may be bare hands. Because, you see, emergency rooms in public hospitals are really 24/7 trauma centers. It's nothing but car accidents and broken bones and burn victims, gunshot wounds, heart attacks, and the docs there are absolutely versed in any kind of trauma there is. So note that if by some bad luck, you awaken surrounded by busted up bloody bodies in a public hospital emergency room, don't freak out, not yet. Don't take any deep breaths either, you'll regret it. But do let them set a broken bone or stabilize you or whatever. But don't let them keep you there overnight if you don't have to. Just call a friend or your lawyer and have them ship you to a private hospital as fast as you can get out of there. So anyway, what I learned from that emergency room doc, the guy who dropped everything to shoot the breeze with us for a while in English, I learned from him that the most frequent emergency room cases seen were, guess what? If you guessed accidents, you'd be right. Then what kind of accidents do you think? You thinking car accidents, maybe? Nope. Try motorcycle accidents. As it turns out, in this public hospital, which is centrally located in a big Latin American city, surrounded, by the way, by some big-time heavy traffic highways and some bad neighborhoods, the sound of motorcycles is pretty much always in the air, believe me. The fact is, when we walked into that big emergency room, and none of the 50 or 60 seats was empty, believe me, you couldn't help but notice that about every third or fourth seat had a guy sitting there, all mangled up with a pretty scuffed up motorcycle helmet on his lap, or on the floor right next to him. Which always begs the question, are there motorcycle helmet laws in Latin America? Well, the word on the street is that they have them, but you wouldn't know it by checking the traffic. A lot of people just go without In fact, maybe those helmet laws are news to the cops because a certain percentage of those guys never wear them either. Now, of course, if you're on or near the Gringo Tourist Trail, you know, Panama, Costa Rica, parts of Mexico, I understand the traffic cops are pretty tuned in to what they can ticket gringos for because we'll pay the fines and stop at the roadblocks, whereas a lot of locals on motorcycles, they know where their roadblocks are, so they'll avoid them or they'll just run right through. I mean, let's face it, why would a motorcyclist stop at one of those transit roadblock checkpoints when, as it turns out, from 40 to 50% of motorcyclists on the road in Latin America do not have a license at all or a valid one that's current. And that's the third biggest reason why motorcyclists dread getting into an accident. First being they might get killed or end up in the hospital. The second reason being their bike would certainly be smashed beyond all recognition. And third, if they haven't got a license and someone else got hurt, they could end up doing jail time and for sure they'll be in court. Now, to back this point up, I actually know a 27-year-old kid who has two motorcycles and he's been in three or four accidents. He's a middle-class guy that works at Citibank. He goes in every day like 100 other drones in suit and tie. And of course, he drives his motorcycle to work every day. And get this, he's been driving since he was 17, that's 10 years, and he still does not have a driver's license. After all, like he says, if he ever gets pulled over, which they never do down here, or he gets stopped by some rare chance at a roadblock, when they find out he doesn't have a license, it's only a $25 fine. And unlike the states, they don't impound your bike. They let you just go on your merry way. And in fact, when I told him up in the states they impound your car or your vehicle if you don't have a license, he looked at me like I was crazy. He just didn't believe it. But I digress as usual. Where were we? Oh, yeah, at the hospital emergency room, the public hospital. Anyway, when I asked that emergency room doc who just had to speak English with me, when I asked him to give me the rundown on the top reasons for emergency room visits, he came back with a piece of paper that had all the emergency room types listed, and he sounded so pleased with himself when he showed me the list. He said, "This is a public hospital, so we keep really good records of such things," showing me a breakdown of emergency room visits for the past month. For his hospital, number one, motor vehicle accidents, with motorcycles coming ahead of cars on that. Number two, can you guess? Chest pain. Number three, fractures, bruises, and sprains. Number four, gastric or abdominal pain and vomiting. Number five, pulmonary difficulties, respiratory problems, and shortness of breath. Number six, fainting slash low blood pressure. Number seven, diabetic shock or coma, including fevers, chills, and headaches. Number eight, gunshot wounds. Number nine, burns. Number 10, intoxication or food poisoning. Now, if you compare that with the list of emergency room visits coming from your average first world hospital, you see some mighty interesting differences. Nowhere on that U.S. hospital top 10 list do you see burns, gunshot wounds, intoxication, or food poisoning. Nor the one about diabetic complications, because most people up in the States who have diabetes are controlled or somewhat controlled, whereas down here in Latin America, the stats say that a good 70% of Latin American diabetics are undiagnosed and receive no treatment at all. Until, of course, they get so severe they end up in the emergency room. Now, this might surprise you. Down here in Latin America, unlike emergency rooms up in the States, nowhere in the Latin American emergency room list are people admitted for colds, flu, or coughing, all three of which show up in the U.S. emergency room top 10. Now, I ask you, why do you think that is? That's because Americans are a bunch of frickin' wimps, especially overindulgent parents who drag their kid over to the emergency room for a runny nose. Come on, going to the emergency room for colds or flu or cough symptoms? Only in that gigantic failed state called the U.S. of A. What a sorry bunch of pansies. All right, you horticulturists and botanists out there, don't blast me with emails on that one, okay? That said, it's no wonder a visit to the Cleveland Clinic emergency room for a cough or flu symptoms could cost you $5,000. Oh, wait a minute, we got that covered. Obamacare will pay for that, right? But now, let's mention a few things about that Latin American First World Hospital that has 18 empty seats out of 20 in the emergency room. Now, when I asked that trauma and emergency room doc over a cup of coffee which emergency room problems were high on the list at his hospital, he told me, that the difference between his emergency room in a very good neighborhood and the public hospital emergency room in a bad neighborhood was that the gunshot wound thing was kind of rare, though they saw him once in a while. They never made the top 20. And he, too, admitted that rarely do they see people come in the emergency room with a fever or a cough or cold or flu symptoms. In fact, he chuckled a bit and shook his head in disbelief when I told him that those took 3 spots on the top 10 in emergency rooms up in the States. Oh, and by the way, he said motor vehicle accidents were on the top of the list at his emergency room, too, but rarely did he see injured motorcyclists because it just wasn't that kind of neighborhood. All cars and SUVs, etc. Now, he did relate a sad fact that I'd known for quite a while. A problem Latins don't want to face, and they just look the other way when it happens. It's the fact that spousal abuse, specifically wife beating, is practically endemic down here. And nobody knows more about that situation than emergency room doctors and dentists. Now, up in the States, of course, it goes on too, but they're politically correct about it, and they don't call it wife beating. They call it interfamiliar abuse, right? Whereas down here, they call it like it is, golpeando su mujer, beating your wife. Now, the emergency room doc confirmed what I've always suspected. On that top 10 emergency room visit list, number 3, the fractured bones, bruises, and bodily trauma, when it's a woman, the doc said, about half the time he suspects spousal abuse. He said he's got a pretty good radar for it. He can tell. And he quickly mentioned that it happens in every class of Latin society equally. And even though he said you'd think it would occur in the lower classes of society much more frequently, since they're living day to day, moment to moment, and always on the edge. And then, on Friday, when Fernando blows his meager paycheck at the local cantina, he comes home drunk and broke and the wife blows her top, well, that's a common recipe for an emergency room visit. That said, according to the emergency room doc, spousal abuse is no less prevalent in the upper levels of society. He says, with the upper middle classes and the wealthy, it's a silent kind of cultural illness. Even though the wealthy guy who beats his wife doesn't look at it that way. In fact, he says it's common to see ladies come into the emergency room with their faces all battered up, even the occasional broken jaw. And in the emergency room report where they write up how it happened, it's almost always the same story. She was clumsy, she fell, she took a spill down the stairs. And most often, get this, it's the so-called concerned husband standing right over her shoulder who, quote, tells the story. And she, in pain, slightly nods and goes along with it because she knows if she doesn't, there's more where that came from. Now, the doc says these guys, no matter if they're rich or poor, they show no remorse and no nervousness at all. The doc said in their macho minds, they feel she deserved it. Let me repeat this once again. He said he believes that about half of the women that come into his ER with fractures and bruises and facial trauma have those injuries as a result of domestic violence. And he said he knows that a woman has to be pretty beat up before she ever makes it to the hospital. He's sure that 90% of the time she ends up nursing her wounds at home and bites the bullet. Now, while we were on that subject, I mentioned to him that up in the States, if someone came into the emergency room, battered around the face, and the ER docs, of course, know what kind of trauma that is. They've seen it so much. And it's not only ER docs, it's dentists too. When they see that kind of facial trauma, whatever, they are obliged by law to report that to the authorities. But most of the time up in the States, it goes unreported too. And the Latin ER doc told me there is no such law down here in Latin America that he knows of. If there was such a law, no one would obey it and the cops wouldn't enforce it anyway. For one, the cops are the worst offenders. Unfortunately, 99% of women won't speak up about it and would never press charges. So then I asked him, what do you do when you see an obvious case yourself? Then he said, just yesterday a lady came in with a fractured jaw, her husband holding her hand and standing right there with her. Then when I took her into the treatment room and got her alone, I saw that she, like so many upper-class Latin women in that situation, was suffering in silence. So, when I get an abused woman like that alone, I'll ask her if she has any kind of a skill that's marketable. And then if she says no, I'll say, well, then you better go back to school and get some kind of career. That will be a way to leave the house. You have to get out of there. Now, note, in Latin America, about 99% of the women who are upper middle class and wealthy, they're totally dependent on their husband's income. Almost none of them have to work for a living, and if they do, it's just a hobby. Then he mentioned another lady trauma victim that came in last week, who actually does have a little business on the side that she just kind of pops in and out of. One of those Curves franchises. And the doc said he urged her to use that business as a way to get out of the house. She just has to get away from her husband. Now, he did admit that no matter how many little talks he gives to traumatized women, he knows he's not changing the world. They're all ears for a moment, but after a couple days when the swelling goes down, it's back to things as usual. The husband apologizes, brings her some chocolate or some flowers, swears he'll never hit her again, and the cycle continues. So that's fair warning to you gringos who come down and hook up with Latin guys. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that 100% of Latin guys beat their women. That's not true. In fact, I know a lot of great Latin guys who'd never hurt a fly. In fact, I know a lot of nice Latin guys whose wives outweigh them by 50 or 100 pounds. So there's always that threat. If you start something, you might get your own ass whipped. But again, that aside, ladies, beware. Nearly all gringas that come on down to Latin America are self-sufficient and highly educated, and not solely dependent on the income of a man. And that, by the way, can be a threat to a Latin-gringa relationship. I've seen that happen before. It's that old-fashioned barefoot and pregnant mentality. Most upper-class and wealthy Latin guys do not like their wives to work. Somehow, because of that macho thing again, they feel they have to be the sole breadwinner of the family. So a wife or girlfriend who has a nice job and a career is a threat to guys like that. As one gringa expat in that position told me, her Latin guy was actually attracted by the fact that she was independent, etc., and was highly educated and had her own career. And of course, it had nothing to do with the fact that she had blue eyes and blonde hair and was white as the belly of a fish. Nah, that had nothing to do with the attraction there, right? Well, even so, she told me that once they got married, then she saw a raving, jealous, possessive side of him take over, and he laid down some dress codes for her, too. Less makeup, looser clothes, longer skirts, all that. That said, she's no longer the happy camper she once was. In fact, she said she joined one of those high-end health clubs, and he actually came to spy on her. To make sure, like she said, she wasn't wiggling too many things in front of the male clients or buffed-out instructors. And she wasn't, but she said when she got home, they got in a fight anyway. So far, she said he's only hit her twice.
South of the border, down Mexico.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos. She was a picture in old style.